Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, welcome in one of the all-time great characters in sports television. And I'm very curious to see if he's spending more time, less time with the advanced stats. The great Brian Kenny of the MLB Network is nice enough to join us. BK, it's John Jastrzemski. How are you, my friend?
John, I'm doing well. Thanks, man. Good to talk to you.
The pleasure's all mine, BK. So listen, I know you love the advanced stats, and I know it has been a passion of yours. So with 3.5 months of not having live baseball, do you find yourself more involved, less involved, same amount of involvement? Let's start there.
I think it's less involvement with everything, you know. It's kind of quarantine-level involvement. I think this season is going to be, hopefully, one, we can play it, and they can play it out and get in 60 games in the playoffs. And once that happens, I mean, it is small sample size theater, as I call it on MLB Now. It's going to be a sprint, and a lot of strange things are going to happen. And, right, the thing about the relationship between, you know, statistics, probability, and what's going to happen in the baseball season is, I think, lessened quite a bit with a shortened season. You know, 162 games, things will even out. That's the beauty of studying the statistics. In 60 games, no, that will not happen. You're going to have hot streaks, hot teams, lots of surprises.
And that's what I love about this, Brian. Listen, I'm a baseball junkie. I love the idea of 162 games, being out at the stadium just like anybody else. But, you know, normally I'm doing a show in mid-April and the Yankees get off to like a 5-6 start. And I'm like trying to talk Yankee fans off the ledge a little bit. You know the deal. You understand New York City. But now, BK, I got to be fair. The Yankees get off to like a 3-10 start. You can't look at it as it's only April. It's only this. With 60 games, every single game takes on so much more meaning. It's going to be so fascinating to see how these games are managed. And it kind of gives you that like NFL, NCAA tournament type feel to a baseball season. So in that regard, it's crazy, it's wacky, but I think for our standpoint, it could be a whole lot of fun.
No question. I mean, there's no question. I was reading today, I get the Joe Sheehan newsletter, and I didn't even realize this, you know, like I think the Vegas odds on, or the Vegas number on the Dodgers wins and losses is 38. And you're thinking, all right, 38-22, is that good? That's actually a pace for 103 wins. So, you know, you don't have to be that far ahead or far behind. Like, it's every game is going to be so much more important. Like, think of the Mariners last year. Were they 13-2 or 12-2? And then they fell flat. But you get to 13-2 start this year. Well, you're almost halfway home.
That's a great point. And, you know, you think about teams like the Yankees or the Dodgers, the Yankees bringing in Gerrit Cole, the Dodgers making a trade for Mookie Betts. And BK, there's no question, over 162 games, I'd expect them to win the division. I'd expect them to be in the postseason, and they'd be one of the Vegas favorites to go and win a World Series. I think it is fair to say, though, teams like that are suited to play 162, they have to be hurt in some way, right? I know the Yankees get a little healthier and they get some guys back, but 60 games, for goodness sakes, anything can happen. So how much do you think the shortened season will help, or I should say hurt, the dominant teams that we expected to see at the start?
I think it makes it a little chancier, no question. But I don't expect like a total like upheaval and a total toppling. What I would think would happen, and I'm just shooting from the hip here, I'm thinking there's probably going to be one team either taking a division or a wild card that we really don't expect, and that over 6 months it wouldn't happen. And so I think that's what's going to happen. I think the Dodgers and the Yankees are so loaded, so deep, that actually playing these games, playing some doubleheaders, and their talent is still going to really press forward, and it's going to show. But I think we're going to get like a weird team, like the White Sox or the Royals, somebody that just comes together and plays well from the start. Like, and that's a very human factor. That's not sabermetric. That's just what team gels and starts playing crisp, good, fundamental baseball from the get-go, gets momentum, and then they don't know they're supposed to be mediocre. Because you don't know, if you're 15 games over 500 or 10 games over 500, you're thinking you're the Royals or the White Sox. You're thinking, well, we are what we are, and that might bear through enough to take a surprise division or a wild card.
When you mention the surprise team, let's think mid-tier teams, Brian. Is there one that you've kind of looked at and said, wow, over 60 games, I like this team a heck of a lot more, as opposed to 162?
I think some of those newer, like the younger teams, like the Royals, that has real talent, and you're thinking, oh, that's a bad baseball team, and yeah, the depth isn't there. But if you have a team that can throw stuff out there, look, that's kind of the Dodgers template, is that, look, we have this deep rotation, and maybe we're not the best rotation compared to the Nationals and the Yankees, etc. But you actually have like a lot of guys who can throw 125 to 150 innings that are excellent. That's kind of the template. But I think a team that is young and that can run, that can play fundamental baseball, is going to have an edge. And, you know, again, I haven't gone through every team, but like the Reds, you know, a team that has suddenly decent talent. The White Sox went out and they got Grandal, and they made some strategic moves here and there. They've got decent talent. And again, decent talent might be enough. Again, in any given week or a month, anybody in the major leagues can be hitting like, you know, Pujols in the early 2000s, and then they level off. But in this case, there's not going to be much leveling off.
Brian Kenny, one of my all-time favorites. You see him all the time on the MLB Network, and it's been a weird couple months for everybody because the game we love has not been a part of our daily life night after night, day after day. So, BK, when it comes to the strategy, right? Like, we all love getting into, why'd you take this guy out after 92 pitches? Why did you make this move as far as the bullpen arm is concerned? Now you think about 60 games, every single one of these managerial moves, for Aaron Boone with the Yankees, for Luis Rojas with the Mets, they're going to be dissected every which way. And then, BK, you throw in the wrinkle of this new extra inning rule. Let's get to that. What is your overall take on starting extra innings with a guy on second base?
I don't like it. I understand it for the season, just like I don't like the DH, like in both leagues. I don't like the DH in baseball, but I totally understand it for the season. So I'm willing to live with it. There's all sorts of things you can do, but I think this is the least disruptive, where you put a guy in scoring position and you'll get these games over with faster. By the way, if you want to really get crazy, think about like, hey, let's load the bases. And do you like load the bases at the start of an inning? How about that? Do you bunt one run in because you'll probably get one in, or do you play for the bigger inning? Like, even that's like more fascinating, but it's crazier. So this isn't bad. We saw it in the WBC. I get it. For this season, I'm fine with it.
And there's going to be some decisions, right? I mean, there's no question, right? Like, whether you mentioned the idea of loading the bases. You have guys who normally don't play small ball. I mean, we see this all the time, BK, and I'm not a big fan of the bunt. And to me, it's something I don't want to see often. If I were pitching, I'd be very thankful anytime anybody's looking to lay a bunt down, because I say, thank you for the out. I'm more than happy to take it. But do you think we will see the element of small ball far more involved, especially in these extra inning situations?
Yes, I think so. I think it – and look, small ball you'll feel the effect. It's just like in the postseason. You know, small ball isn't bad. It's when you mindlessly play small ball because that's tradition and that's baseball. But there's all sorts of instances where playing for one run and getting a lead and putting psychological pressure on your opponent makes sense. And, oh, by the way, you actually do. It's one of the rare cases where you improve your run potential by bunting a guy over to third base with nobody out. So now you have a guy, you know, a guy on second, nobody out. It becomes third base with one out. You've actually increased your run expectancy. So it's one of the few times where bunting does make sense. So, yeah, you're going to have an instance where, or plenty of instances where it's not like bunting is giving up an out. It's actually putting a guy in a better position where your team can get that one single run.
When it comes to your love of advanced stats, BK, when did it begin? Like, I never noticed over at ESPN when you were working there that you were this advanced stats junkie. And maybe it's, you know, me being naive, me not paying attention. But the minute I started watching on the MLB Network, I'm like, man, he loves this stuff. So I'm very curious. When did that, like, love affair of, like, Bill James and War and all these numbers that you love throwing out there, that you love to speak of, when did that really start to take shape?
Oh, it was the early 90s, long before I got to ESPN. But I wasn't, like, I wasn't a zealot. Like, that wasn't my thing. I just loved baseball. And I was always doing Hall of Fame study was, you know, my great love, which is, you know, I do many things for the Hall of Fame now. So I that's, you know, my passion. But I love doing, you know, Hall of Fame analysis. So I was always trying to look and see, like, hey, are there more stats that I'm not understanding with, you know, Ron Santo, Phil Rizzuto, the big causes of the day. So I was always looking up as many stats as I could. And as I started to dig into it, and this is the early 90s, I started reading things in Total Baseball, which was John Thorne, Pete Palmer, then Bill James. And by the time I got to do Baseball Tonight on ESPN, I was just throwing in things like, hey, Bobby Abreu has a 420 on base. That's fifth in the National League, you know, as you're ad-libbing over a highlight. And people were like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, you're on base and you're slugging. Those are vitally important. It was like, what about batting average, RBIs? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, sure, but these seem to be more indicative of the player's value. Like, I was just following it through. And once that became kind of a culture war, then yes, I seemed to be that guy yelling at ex-ball players. I did it to poor Harold Reynolds at ESPN and then at MLB Network, where I'm like, hey, don't you see what this is? But the ex-players who had grown up in a, with a totally different language really didn't. So there was that culture clash for a number of years.
And isn't it crazy now, BK, when you talk to the modern player, you mentioned launch angle, you mentioned some of these numbers that seem like a foreign language to players maybe in the 70s and the 80s. Now, I mean, all these players are getting these statistics left and right, and it kind of speaks to the way baseball has evolved and changed over a 20 or 30-year period.
Oh, yeah, when you talk to a player that's, you know, under the age of 30 in the major leagues right now, they're talking a more sophisticated baseball language than the fan. They're not out there saying, hey, I just grip it and rip it anymore. They've studied. These guys study. They played year-round baseball growing up. They have the advantage of looking at video, swing plane, their own, physiology. They've studied these things. By the time a guy now gets to the major leagues, when you ask him, especially a pitcher, even more than a hitter, about his pitch repertoire or like changing speeds or the axis of his pitches or the break or his breaking stuff or the way he puts together his pitches. He's not like, well, I just go by the feel. No, no. He has studied it. He understands what he's doing and he's in a constant quest to try to figure out what works and what doesn't. So in a lot of ways, analytics has become very much a player-centric game right now.
When it comes to offensive statistics, BK, my favorite is OPS. I love OPS. It's always been a stat of mine that I get all geeked up about. I talk about it on the air. Like, if a player has a certain OPS, you see, like, that 850. You see that 900 number. Heaven forbid you see 1,000. You know you're cooking with something special. Is that your favorite offensive statistic?
No. I rarely use it. But
interesting. I'm surprised by that. I'm surprised.
Well, here's the thing. You can shoot right past that. Because what you want, like, you'd want to know, like, if the guy has an OPS, whatever it is, 850, you'd want to know, hey, did he do that at Dodger Stadium or Fenway Park, right?
That's fair.
Yeah, you want to know the park effects. OPS plus, just add that. Add the plus. The plus is park effects. And it also leavens things to the run-scoring environment. Like, you can compare a guy's OPS plus pretty evenly between either last year, if you're looking at, say, Mookie Betts, and Carl Yastrzemski in 1968, which was a dead ball year with no run scoring. And the OPS Plus will tell you how the guy did as compared to the run scoring environment of his year, of his league in that year. So if all you do is OPS Plus, you've made the great improvement, and I think it's more fan-friendly. 100 is league average. So if you see a guy with a 110, hey, that's a good player. 120, you're an all-star. 140 and up, you're probably an MVP consideration. Like a 190 is what like Mike Trout or Bryce Harper did that 1 year, 2015. That's a guy having a monster historic year. So I would just switch it right over to OPS Plus. You put in park effects, and then you can do historical comparison. You've got it. You've got it all. It's not a perfect number. It's context neutral. It doesn't tell you, did he do it in the ninth inning with guys on second and third and two outs? No, it doesn't tell you that. But it's like batting average. It tells you what a guy does on the by and large.
Hey, BK, you learn something new every day. And now, as I monitor this baseball season, anytime I take a look at OPS Plus, if I'm researching players for fantasy, if I'm diving in as I'm getting ready for a team to come to New York, I will forever think of you for that. So I got to thank you for that. OPS Plus, I'm in on that.
There you go. Look, I've like emerged from the forest in quarantine, and I've already helped in the big city. Excellent.
There you go. I love it. Now, I want to bring this to your attention because you love these numbers, and you love talking about these numbers, and yet that human element matters, right? Like, we could talk about a player's OPS, we could talk OPS Plus, and then there is this element of handling New York City, handling the ninth inning, handling being able to hit with two outs in the ninth inning down a run. Like, do you believe, BK, there is a fine line in looking at some of these statistics? Now, listen, you look at OPS Plus, or you look at some of the numbers that favor Mike Trout, it's obvious, the best player in all baseball. But then there are certain guys, like LeMahieu last year, I felt was so much better than even the numbers would indicate. They were damn good. Or Urshela being another guy. Like, do you believe in that notion of clutch and being able to rise to the occasion and almost letting your eyes in some instances tell a story? Like, that to me is always the challenge in looking at statistics, the eye test, kind of merging them together, if that makes sense. Like, I always am a guy that, like, I want to use the statistics. I want to measure and value the statistics, but I'm not going to let my eyes deceive me. You know what I mean?
Well, I know exactly what you're saying, and I would say this to any fan or to you who's, you know, a professional and you're observing this and you're seeing it and you're seeing like DJ LeMahieu last year. You should probably keep asking questions. That's kind of the critical thought. And this goes all across life. Like, think things through, think independently. There must be something you're liking about DJ LeMahieu in his season. And if you're watching him last year, there was a lot to like. So keep asking yourself, okay, what was it exactly? And you could see his batting averages on base, his slugging, they were all like sky high. They were all excellent. And he was playing good defense. And he was playing multiple positions. And he didn't seem to like slump at any part. This is something Joel Sherman always brought up to us on MLB Now because he was watching the Yankees very closely. And he would say, you know, LeMahieu in any given series never seems to go away. You know, a lot of guys will, you know, kind of have an 0-for-4 and an 0-for-4. And then on that last day of the series, they have the 3-for-4, but it ended up in an 11-3 loss. So you're thinking, hey, the guy really didn't do much, but his numbers on the whole looked good. LeMahieu did not have that. LeMahieu was actually contributing. It was a solid, consistent producer, game to game, at bat for at bat. And if you're watching the Yankees inning for inning, you notice that. So I would just say, if you see something that you really like, and you're like, there's something about this guy I like, or this season that the numbers aren't catching, well, maybe the numbers are catching it, just not the numbers that we look at normally. So if you dig deeper, you can find things like that, and then you could explain why. And by the way, LeMahieu's win probability added, I think, was top 10 in the American League last year.
There you go. So the numbers back it up, at least. There you go.
Yeah. And so you could say, hey, that guy really seems clutch, which, by the way, that happens a lot. Like, Bryce Harper last year, you know, he had a lot of game-winning hits. He was like top 5 in baseball in win probability added, even though his overall numbers were not MVP level. But if you're thinking, hey, the guy seemed to win games, the answer is yes, he did, and you could back that up with the numbers. And I would just say, if you see something, even if you can't, you're identifying something, try to search to see what that something is.
I love it. BK, final one before we say goodbye. Your favorite player statistically currently in Major League Baseball, there's got to be one. And when it comes to the Hall of Fame, which I know is something you are very passionate about, it's near and dear to your heart, who is the guy that's still on the ballot from a statistical standpoint that you feel compelled year after year after year to make the case for?
Well, a lot of the guys that I've made cases for on MLB Network over the last few years have gotten in. Edgar Martinez, Mike Messina, Alan Trammell, guys that were seen to me to be obvious Hall of Famers. I'll just give you guys who aren't on the ballot, who fell off the ballot because of the 5% rule. I could go in any direction in this, but Bernie Williams not being on the ballot makes zero sense. Jorge Posada not being on the ballot makes zero sense. Keith Hernandez is a Hall of Famer. Dwight Evans is a Hall of Famer. Thurman Munson, I could go either way, but you know what? I've made a case before. He could easily be a Hall of Famer, even if you take out the tragic circumstances of his passing. So there is there are a number of players where I've made that case. At the very forefront, like the center fielders that everyone expects that center fielders have to hit, like Mantle or even Ken Griffey Jr., and historically it's just not the case. And Bernie Williams doing all the winning that he did and being the best position player, and he was for the championship seasons, and if you expand it a little bit, he's pretty much even with Derek Jeter. And he won 4 world titles and 6 pennants and 7 division titles in an 8-year stretch. Is that not enough winning when you're the best player on those teams? That, to me, says Bernie Williams is a Hall of Famer.
Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, Keith Hernandez. Talk about endearing yourself to the New York audience, Brian Kenny.
So that's I grew up in
multi-purpose, you know?
Yeah, so no, I've been paying attention. By the way, if you were watching Keith Hernandez, are you old enough to have watched Keith Hernandez?
See, Keith is a little before my time, but I'm with you on Bernie. Bernie, to me, when I look at his case, ALCS MVP, I mean, Bernie winning a batting title. And you're right, BK, 96 and 98, I say for sure. Bernie Williams was the best player on those 2 Yankee teams. Maybe by 99, it was starting to be Jeter's team. But the point being is, yes, Bernie Williams being off the ballot after 1 year, I think that's absurd. I can't fight you on that. Now, I don't know if I'd put him in the Hall of Fame. I have a very crazy high standard for guys I'm putting in, but I totally understand the argument. I do.
Look, you know, the idea is I'm going to go like where you – it's like my heel turn. Because I grew up hearing all about this, about being a winner and how many rings did you win? And I'm like, oh, come on. It's an it's a team sport, but there are individuals who are, you know, you have to isolate the production. But never lose sight of the fact that it is about winning. And Bernie Williams being like, wasn't just on those teams. He was kind of the reason, you know, him, offensive players at defensive positions, which was Bernie, Posada, and Jeter at shortstop, catcher, and center field. He was a large part of why they were winning. And he, by the way, even from 96 to 2003, he was clearly the best hitter on those Yankee teams. Clearly, it's not close. But also, he was, like even if you use war, he was a win above replacement below Jeter, 96 to 2003. And by the way, Jeter is a slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famer. It ain't close. We know that. So how is Bernie not even on the ballot? I would say when you lead that, like if you say, well, what are you going to do? Put everybody in who did what Bernie did? Yes, definitely put in everybody that did what Bernie did. There's like 4 or 5 of them in the history of baseball. That's it. And most of them are like Frankie Frisch or Lou Gehrig or Yogi Berra. They're in the Hall of Fame.
Brian Kenny, always bringing it, always has the statistical knowledge to his advantage. And that's why I can't get enough of watching a guy on MLB Now. Brian, hopefully you got some games to talk about in the not-too-distant future. I really appreciate the time. Continued success. All the best, all right?
Thank you. It's great talking with you. We're back. MLB Now is back next Monday. So we're back.
There you
Monday,
go. Next 4, Monday, MLB Now. I'm in. I'll be watching. I need something to do, Brian. Come on now.
Hey, take care.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.